Hi, Andrew. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Daniel.
So yeah, I really enjoyed your talk last year in Bali at the Indonesian Bitcoin Conference, where you gave an overview, a high-level overview of Bitcoin development, but kind of in a way that non-technical people could still understand it. So yeah, you were nice enough to kind of join us to do that talk over here. But before we get into that, I just want to ask you a little bit about yourself, like who are you and what's your involvement in Bitcoin?
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. I'm very grateful for your interest and not my take on it, but generally anything related to subsurface kind of level of Bitcoin. Myself, I come from a background in technology, like self-taught engineer. And many years ago, I started my career at a university research lab. We set up a supercomputer, and then I got quite deep into open source development. It was very lucky, but I quickly became part of the FreeBSD development team, a committer on the port side, porting hundreds of different apps, open source mostly, to work well on the FreeBSD operating system. That was what? Oh, wow. It's almost 20 years ago, maybe 18 years ago. FreeBSD is quite unique because it takes lineage from BSD, Berkeley Software Distribution, and before that, like it takes lineage from Unix System 5, so all the way to the 1960s. And some people who started working on that project in 1970s are still with the project, coding and committing like every day or every week. And at the time I was working on it, there was 400 people working all remote. So I also got to understand how the Linux project works and, you know, got to compare everything from the technical side to the governance side. So later on, I joined a startup as a founding CTO, did that for a few years, then slowly moved to the business and product side. And after that first startup, that was like around 10 years ago, helped some smaller projects. And fast forward to 2017, I helped co-found a hardware wallet company, Tangem, which is still doing great. It's actually finally reached a hockey stick growth. All the numbers are private between hardware wallet companies in terms of revenue and finances. It looks like sales-wise, Tangem is now the second in the world after Ledger. And it's not a Bitcoin-only wallet. So, and I'm not, I'm still co-founder, but I stepped away from operations a couple of years ago to focus myself more on Bitcoin technologies, the protocol, the maybe some custodial strategies. So I would currently describe myself as a, let's say, part-time self-funded researcher into Bitcoin code and protocol. So as a disclaimer, I'm not a Bitcoin developer, like strictly speaking. I'm not part of the Bitcoin core development team.
One question I often get from people who don't know much about Bitcoin, they ask, oh, is there anything happening with Bitcoin development still? Can you maybe explain?
Yes, it seems there's a lot happening with Bitcoin development. When people think about Bitcoin, I think most people think about Bitcoin as a concept. So when you hear Michael Saylor or Jack Dorsey talk about Bitcoin, it's a concept, it's an idea, it's extremely strong. And, you know, most of the discussion, they start and stop there because you already have very strong assumptions that it's 21 million, is like very strong consensus, it's unhackable, game theory, all those claims and assumptions. And just statistically, most people don't get past that into like what's behind the scenes, what's behind the curtain. There are some more technical people. Some of them are very well known. Sioris is one of the developers behind Bitcoin, and he gives talks at some conferences from time to time. And he wrote a book, Bitcoin in Progress. Wonderful book because it exposes Bitcoin as a project that is living, but also imperfect. So a lot to work on. A lot of mistakes have been done and fixed during Bitcoin development. And, you know, if the trend continues, more mistakes will be made and hopefully fixed without too much trouble. There's Jameson Lopp, who does a lot of very good research, independent research and talks on Bitcoin. He goes deeper into the technicals, but always presents it in a very understandable way. And then the third type of people, which I highlight, like maybe Balaji and Vitalik Buterin, they treated Bitcoin as an engineering breakthrough, but also a proof of concept. And a proof of concept requires the next step to build like a more mature, featureful, sustainable system. Balaji is also bullish on Bitcoin, but he's very interested and he publishes a lot of thoughts on other Web3 projects. So for me, there's like three ways to take Bitcoin. It's like an idea, a concept, then there's like engineering take, and then there's a take where, okay, Bitcoin was interesting, but we need to build something better. When you ask, is anyone working on Bitcoin? I think we're kind of in the middle. When you learn about Bitcoin, you're like, okay, what is it? And it's a system. So most people heard about the Bitcoin white paper that came out. It was written and published in 2008 and 2009 by Satoshi. Not many people know that it actually doesn't define much of the protocol. It defines very high level. It's only 9 pages long. So the code from 2009, the original Bitcoin code that was done by Satoshi and what is now many years later is known as Bitcoin Core. And fortunately, many, many more parts of the protocol that were defined later, both during the time that Satoshi was still with us under his original nickname and after he left, a lot of extensions, you probably heard about SegWit, Taproot, many other details were added. Those were properly defined in what is called BIPs, Bitcoin Improvement Proposals. They are modeled on improvement proposals from other open source projects. Because again, by the time Bitcoin appeared, the open source culture has been almost more than half a century old. So there was a lot to borrow from other other projects.
I just want to ask you, Andrew, that documentation that you were referring to, is that kind of meant to be more as actual documentation, or is this supposed to be a protocol specification where this is the source of truth? Or is the source of truth the Bitcoin code?
Yeah, so currently that's the problem. Currently the Bitcoin Core code is the source of truth. Or you can argue, okay, the source of truth is actually the consensus between developers that are working on it that are very vaguely defined, because there's technically dozens of people working on Bitcoin. And we have the network consensus well defined in the code, at least. You know, most people agree it's well defined, right? Like the longest chain with the most amount of proof of work is the correct one, and some many more like technical rules to that, but it's well defined. But the consensus behind that, the consensus of developers that work on that code every day and can introduce, you know, hard forks, soft forks, SegWit, Taproot, many other things. They get to decide the block size. That consensus, we don't know how to. There are some mechanisms that the Bitcoin community tried over the years. Some of them have technical aspects, but generally it's just a political, you can say it's a political process. And that's where the illusion of perfection can start to suffer. You suddenly realize, okay, yes, Bitcoin as a concept, it's ideal, it's perfect. But Bitcoin is a living thing in the real world, developed by live human beings that have, you know, interests, obligations, and they are vulnerable actually to, you know, potentially outside interference, positive and negative. That is real, and that actually defines what we use every day. And you're not, as a user, if you don't run a full node, you're not isolated from it.
I just want to also explain to people why it's so different than other protocols like the internet, where in Bitcoin, the actual implementation, the Bitcoin Core software, that's the rules of the Bitcoin protocol. The reason that is because unlike something like the internet, you need consensus in Bitcoin. And if you don't have that consensus, you're just going to have a split chain where you have essentially two coins if you don't have consensus. So in the internet, if somebody doesn't implement the protocol correctly, as given by the documentation, that's not a big deal. Somebody doesn't implement the protocol correctly, and it just means maybe we can't communicate temporarily until we figure out what's going wrong and we fix it, and then we can communicate on Bitcoin. No big deal. But in Bitcoin, if consensus between the nodes does not match, we're going to start actually having two different coins. And then it becomes which coin is the real coin. Basically, we get a split of Bitcoin, Bitcoin I and Bitcoin B. And it's very problematic. So that's why we actually need that consensus. That's why it's hard to implement a kind of documentation, because if you have documentation and people implement it, if there's a slight tiny difference, even a slight tiny difference in the actual implementation, it could cause that chain split. So that's why in Bitcoin, we had the actual implementation, the code being the documentation.
That's true. The cost of mistakes in Bitcoin or any system that handles mission critical things is very high. The thing is, like, there are two problems with that. One is the code of Bitcoin Core has been exploding in size. So while Satoshi was still there, it was just, you know, growing maybe linearly, very conservatively. And there was a ton of development during Satoshi's time from multiple people. And they found a lot of bugs, they fixed them. And yet, you know, through all those early years, it was obvious that Bitcoin code was always meant as a proof of concept. It was meant to demonstrate or even experiment to try out the concept. Can it survive in the real world? Is it interesting to anyone? Then when, you know, the prices started exploding, it attracted a lot of people who were just, you know, various interests. But because they were statistically mostly driven by the price explosion, we can maybe at least suspect that many of them were driven by the speculative aspect or maybe opportunistic aspect, as opposed to the first couple of years, the first like 2-3 years where it was pure technology. It was too worthless to be interested from a monetary perspective. I was comparing Bitcoin Core to other mature open source projects like Postgres or Linux. And it's fascinating how Bitcoin is the only kind of significant project where you can trace the cadence of development to the cycles, to the halving cycles. And I was just thinking about it yesterday. I realized Bitcoin is the only open source project that codifies how many people will work on this code base. It's the only code base that codifies how many people will work on it in itself. Because it has the halving mechanism in the code, that halving mechanism kind of affects the value, and that value attracts more developers, and those developers create more code. So like any other long-term, short-term open source projects, you don't get that because, you know, there's no connection to the real-world timescale. It's just pure technology. But with Bitcoin Core, it defines connection to real-world time. And that affects how many people. So it's kind of fascinating.
I'll describe a chart. So basically, you're right. So Andrew showed us a chart of Bitcoin development over the last 10 years. And you can see it kind of resembles the Bitcoin price chart. When there's a peak in the Bitcoin price, there's actually a peak in Bitcoin development also. And then kind of like falls off when the price falls off, Bitcoin development also falls off a bit. So that's interesting. Yeah.
For other projects like in Postgres, you can see kind of annual peaks. I guess because in northern countries, in winter time, people have a little more time to sit at home and code. Maybe for Linux, something similar. But the thing about that is the code exploded in size. So I know that a lot of the code in the main repository that you can find on GitHub under GitHub/Bitcoin/Bitcoin. Normally, the more code you have, the more bugs you have, the more problems you have. So a lot of experienced engineers, they prefer less code and they prefer to remove code as opposed to add it. With Bitcoin, the growth of that code was astonishing over the past decade. But a lot of that code is tests. So it's not the main node that you're running, but tests that help it be more well-tested automatically, like unit tests, integration tests. A lot of that code is the graphical user interface. Like, you know, when Satoshi launched the first Bitcoin version, it was only meant to run on Windows. And running on Windows, you kind of expect as a user to have a user interface. So he coded a very simple front end in a technology called WX widgets, I think, which got later replaced with Qt. GUI graphical user interfaces tend to take up a lot of lines of code. and it just ballooned. So this chart we're looking at is just almost exponential growth in a metric called lines of code count. Again, it's not very deep and accurate. So when Satoshi was starting the project, the lines of code was, I think when he published, it was maybe 10, 20,000 lines of code. And he did that over 18 months, according to himself. But late last year, it was already over 700 lines of code. We're nearing 1 million lines of code. And there's a rule in software engineering that usually the number of bugs per line of code stays roughly constant. So it means if you go from 10,000 to 700,000, maybe you have 70 times more bugs in absolute numbers. And again, of course, a lot of that code is not critical. Take it with a grain of salt, but it's still a huge problem. Keep in mind that we don't have a written protocol spec. So technically, the only way to kind of fully learn and verify the current state of Bitcoin protocol is to go into this code. And yes, you can ignore big parts of it, but it's still growing super fast. It's growing faster than anyone can read and understand it. And in a previous talk, I think I put out this maxim that it's like, you know about block size limitation, right? That is, as long as the block size stays limited, it can run on tens of thousands of computers around the world. That makes the network resilient. If we start growing the block size, then it becomes more difficult for many people to run. So like the blockchain will not fit in many cheaper computers, and it's a problem. And I think that is an amazing feature of Bitcoin, that it's easy to run for tens of thousands of people, even like millions of people. But to me, what's even more important potentially is that the technical complexity of Bitcoin has to be understandable to a human. It has to fit in a human brain. Because if we lose that, if nobody can say they can understand the fundamentals of Bitcoin anymore, and even more importantly, go into the code and verify that, then that's it. Like, I mean, game over. And I could argue that by some metric, we already lost that game or losing that game. And here we look at another quick chart which charts the market share of different Bitcoin nodes. So again, there's like probably anywhere between 30 to 50,000 nodes, but the public ones that we can see on the network. So there are many nodes that are in private mode. You cannot see them or reach them easily, but there are at least around like 15 to 20,000 nodes currently on the network that are public. And you can connect to them and ask them, which version of Bitcoin are you running? And overwhelmingly, almost 100% of them seem to be running Bitcoin Core. Different versions, maybe over half of them run quite recent versions from the past 2-3 years. And then, you know, some clients don't report which version they're running. Most of them are still probably Bitcoin Core, just with more privacy settings. There are alternative node implementations. I think the most well-known is BTCD that is used by many Lightning node operators. For me, it's like obvious there's not enough diversity among the clients. And when a single code base dominates the network to an extent, it's like 90 to 100%, that can become a problem because every code base has bugs, and a lot of protocols survive thanks to the fact that there are different competing code bases working kind of against each other and with each other. And let's say if Gmail tomorrow does something very wrong with emails, there's a bug in Gmail. Yes, it will be painful for a lot of users because Gmail is so huge, but also anyone can just log in into another service, Outlook, and not, you know, lose a day of work. And Gmail can quickly fix that, just look and maybe working with engineers from other projects if they need to, and making sure it works well together with other things. For Bitcoin Core, if there's like a big problem, a big bug in the code base, you know, not all bugs are discovered immediately. Sometimes they can persist for years or even decades. So for super important protocols, such as I believe Bitcoin is, I think it's very important to have some kind of like adversarial kind of diversity of code bases working off the same protocol, but continuously kind of interacting, interoperating, testing each other. Because when you have different implementations, they always test each other in the real world. And that way you can discover bugs much, much faster. There are actually different attempts to re-implement Bitcoin, like full node, re-implement Bitcoin protocol from scratch in different languages. So BTCD is maybe the most popular. There's about a dozen other projects. Unfortunately, most of them are not very well maintained. I'll give you an example. When Coinbase, the company, got started, when was it, like 2010, I think, or what, 11, 12? I don't even remember the year, but very early on, they actually started implementing their own Bitcoin node based on Postgres, which to me kind of makes sense because Bitcoin is a database and you can, so it's very tempting to try to re-implement it using a real world kind of very mature database such as Postgres. And they named it Toshi. And then 2014 happened, like all the hype and everything. They just somehow just gave up on that effort. And I see a big spike of attempts to implement full node around 2014.
I believe one of the reasons they dropped that at the time was because they found a lot of bugs in it, a lot of incompatibility with actual Bitcoin Core. And so yeah, I guess it was harder than they expected. So that might be why they dropped it.
Of course. Then the original Bitcoin core code was much smaller and the protocol was smaller. There was no Taproot. At the time they started it, I think there was no SegWit even. So it was relatively much easier to re-implement Bitcoin. Today it's much, much harder. It's still possible. It makes you wonder. Yeah, of course it's difficult, but it makes you wonder what's with the, let's say, industry or what's the, with the system that lacks incentives to produce good implementations of the protocol or enough incentives to handle the complexity of the protocol. Maybe that's part of the equation is on one hand is incentives, but the other part is the complexity of the protocol. It's not just the code of Bitcoin Core is growing, but the tightly coupled complexity of the protocol. Right, so that's quite concerning to me as an engineer.
Some people believe that they shouldn't really be attempts to re-implement Bitcoin Core. Yeah. Basically, you know, some people say Bitcoin is Bitcoin Core. It kind of is because that's the reference implementation. So some people say it's foolish to try and replicate it. Just understand this is a reference implementation and don't replicate it. Just work on it and improve it and don't try and kind of do a different implementation for Bitcoin Core. So some people just don't think it's actually even a good idea.
Yeah, I know we have Hugo. He's the author of Nunchuck Wallet. I saw him verbalize that idea also on Twitter. So it's coming from some of the smart people believe that, but I think it might be not from lack of wisdom, but from maybe lack of perspective. I can use my kind of old fart engineer card. I've seen like decades worth of open source projects implementing open protocols. Yes, it does work when there's only one implementation, but then you don't have a protocol. You just have a code base and it can work, but it's extremely fragile. You know, in the world of biology, the problem with bananas, so we have Cavendish bananas everywhere in the world that is basically one DNA because they are kind of farmed through cloning. And this type of bananas is dying because this single DNA aspect, there's a fungi that is attacking it. And once it attacks one plant, it wipes out everything. And before Cavendish, until 1960s, there was a better type of banana. I think it was called Gros Michel or something like that. And it was like sweeter and better flavor. But it was also farmed through DNA cloning, where you just cut a leaf and plant it in the ground. So same DNA, all the plants. And it was just wiped out by another fungi. And most people never tasted it. Most people, like, if you're not 100 years old, you don't know how that banana tasted. So there's a lot of evidence from different sides of security that you need diversity. You need different implementations to to compete. You know, when they sent astronauts to the moon, they had a special computer that had three almost like different heterogeneous implementations of the navigation code, that if there's a bug in one place, it will be not repeated in two other places, and the system can reach correct consensus. Because today, the consensus in the Bitcoin network, it's, again, if there's any bug in Bitcoin Core, it will be instantly accepted in the consensus. There's no competition. There's no firewall. But if there were separate implementations, and again, when you and I talk about Bitcoin, we're not talking about Bitcoin Core. We're talking about the ideals, the protocol, the things we understand. We don't want the idea of Bitcoin to kind of overwhelm, to get beyond our capacity to comprehend. Some of us value Bitcoin because we know it's like 21 million ever. And we've seen those like a few lines of code that actually until recently-ish, they had a bug. I think it was fixed when, 2017? So there was like, I don't know, 10 lines of code that defined the upper limit around, it's actually not exactly, but around 21 million. And until a few years ago, there was a bug that would inflate Bitcoin to infinity after some time. And that got fixed. It's still maybe 20 lines of code today. We can comprehend that, right? And we value that aspect. But, you know, there's 1,000 different and some newer rules to Bitcoin, again, related to SegWit, Taproot, many other things that are being discussed, debated, and implemented today. And I don't think there's almost any engineer out there alive today that can, you know, comprehend to a good degree both the technical and the kind of game theoretical consequences of many of those rules. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, the legislation in a democracy. Yes, you don't want to like the whatever, there's like millions of pages of legislation. You don't want everyone to go through all of that, but you need people to kind of meet each other somewhere, right? On critical points, like whatever that is, politics, whatever, like immigration, take a topic. You need people to understand, to be able to comprehend it, to debate and reach consensus and feel safe in their country, territory, whatever city. If you lose that completely, if you give up on that completely and say, okay, we understand a couple of things, the rest, leave it to the wizards, and we'll never be able to understand that. Is that still Bitcoin, or is that Bitcoin Plus? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's tough. Because yeah, there's some things like clearly, yeah, I don't have a good answer, because clearly something like 21 million, if there's a bug where actually you can create 50 million, that's pretty obviously a bug. But if it's something smaller, kind of, you know, basically what's a bug and what's not a bug? Like some Bitcoin developers said, but because we need consensus, if there's like a bug in Bitcoin Core, we actually, if you do an implementation, you need to replicate that bug. So we stay in consensus. But yeah, Bitcoin is very different than other projects. So I would say we probably need like some kind of maybe core principles, more than like specific documentation, like core principles of what makes Bitcoin. And, you know, if an implementation needs to adhere to the core principles, like the core principle is 21 million Bitcoin. I don't know, maybe some kind of, something like a constitution, right? Like a constitution document for a country, where the constitution doesn't outline necessarily all the laws of a country, over specific, but kind of outlines the most important kind of principles that make a country.
Exactly.
So maybe something like that.
So it's like a hierarchy, right? But even like constitution, take Constitution of the United States and the amendments, they are clearly written, but even they require interpretation, and they require the Supreme Court. I don't remember the exact terms, but there are people who take it more literally, the letter of the Constitution. There are people who take it more in the spirit of it. Some people do both or neither. So all of it is human. It's, you know, code is law. It's a very tricky notion. It's still people that run the code. They choose which code to run. They choose which version to run. Like, you choose which Bitcoin Core version to run, and nobody can force you. And it's open source. You can actually tweak it before starting the code. You can go in and maybe on your node, you remove the 21 million, it wouldn't change much because you're not a huge miner, right? But anything goes. Even if we adhere to this code as law, then it's a problem of code bloat, because it used to be something maybe incomplete, but quite readable to an experienced C++ coder. But today it's just incomprehensible, with the exceptions of some central parts, but it becomes more and more incomprehensible because the complexity is exploding. And a lot of the complexity is just a little bit ridiculous. Until last year, actually, there was this leadership position, like semi-formally defined in the Bitcoin project. And I, like, famously, until 2011, it was Satoshi, like just a de facto leader. And then when he was leaving, he left this position to Gavin. And Gavin was there till 2014. And interestingly, both Gavin and the next one, Vladimir, it's an informal position. It did carry some weight, like decision making and design. And both Gavin and Vladimir, they left publicly stating disenchantment and dissatisfaction with the direction and the process of Bitcoin development. So actually, Vladimir, I think both of them, but especially Vladimir, deleted some of those blog posts, I believe. But they still, you can still find them in cache. It's a bit disheartening. Like, these people were kind of de facto leaders of the Bitcoin Core development process, and they felt kind of compelled to step away for a variety of complicated reasons.
Do you know why Vladimir decided to step away? Like, what did he state?
So when you work for many years, for like 10 years, work quite closely with other developers, it's quite a tight bond. Especially if you're like good enough to be a leader and diplomatic, you don't want to point finger too much. So he was quite vague. But yeah, I think one of the reasons he actually enumerated was like lack of diversity and the complexity of starting a different code base, something like that. I may be extrapolating a little bit, but definitely a lot of processes around, like, you know, debates and how issues are forced in the community. And even after leaving those positions, they kept participating in discussions on GitHub around issues. GitHub serves as a public forum to discuss and find the best solutions to problems. They keep participating, and you can gauge some of their concerns and maybe dissatisfaction with the shape of those arguments. Maybe he might agree to chat. We should ask him, actually. But it was clear that it wasn't any technical point. It's probably not a personal point, but it's the general kind of shape of the process of development that wears out people who had to carry that responsibility, like psychologically, and they're true engineers. And one thing I love about Gavin is that he was the only significant contributor engineer behind Bitcoin who deleted, according to GitHub statistics, deleted more code than contributed. That is rare. That is usually a sign of a very good engineer who refactors things to take less space rather than more. Yeah, and then we don't have a formal leader anymore. And currently, still, we have 5 people that have a privilege of merging pull requests. So they have, like, you could say they have direct access to contribute, to merge new code into Bitcoin. And most of them are quite recent. Like, the oldest one, Michael Ford, became a maintainer in 2019. And the rest are 21, 21, 22, 23. So that's another interesting dissimilarity from other open source projects. Like, if you take Postgres, BSD Linux, like big open source significant projects that carry a lot of value, people in a position of maintainership are usually some of the oldest contributors, because they need to be extremely conservative. They need to preserve the original spirit, and they need to preserve the pace of development, like, from getting out of hand. And with Bitcoin, we see kind of a little bit the opposite, right? Like, most of those people are relatively young, and or and or new to the Bitcoin project. Of course, before they became maintainers in the past couple of years, they were contributors for years, but still many of them are quite new. It's also very easy to see that many of them don't have very deep experience in security or industrial systems development or open source before Bitcoin. So it's very interesting how it works today. If it doesn't generate any questions, like what is being merged today and why is it growing so fast, then it's a problem. And I hope through conversations like this today, we can stoke a little bit more interest for people to just start paying attention a little more, start asking these questions.
So I just wanted to ask you something else, Andrew. So there's this concept of ossification, that the Bitcoin protocol will ossify. Basically, what we mean by that, we won't have any major changes. And some people think it's good in some ways because it kind of ossifies, it hardens and it's good enough. It has those network effects and we can kind of trust it in the future. Do you think Bitcoin ossification is a good thing or not?
So it's a tightrope. To give maybe another example is like, let's say Boeing 737. So an airplane design that is kind of ossified because it was first shipped in 1960s, and they try to keep it ossified to make it very easy for the airlines and pilots. But then there are upgrades that are absolutely necessary to stay competitive. And then you have, 737 MAX, which was initially a disaster that killed a lot of people. So it's a tightrope for absolutely super critically important mission critical protocols and code bases, absolutely necessary changes versus maximum conservatism. And it should be like purposeful, conscious conservatism rather than incidental ossification. And it does require extremely experienced engineers to guide us to that. Like people who've been through multiple, decade-long cycles of technology development that we currently, I don't think we have among Bitcoin developers, but I do see them in other, in other very important open source projects, such as Linux, Postgres. They have people who have been through those cycles and they know how to guide development to stay on track. But a lot of people, including myself, I would argue there's a lot more code going into Bitcoin, it seems to me, than is absolutely necessary for its successful operation. And the barrier for the code to be merged is not super high today. I would argue it's not conservative enough yet. So ossification might happen, but not because of that very well-meaning and well thought out purposeful conservatism.
So you think we actually doing too many changes, but we're not ossified enough right now? Okay. So in some ways, what kind of actually surprises me, I haven't been keeping exactly up to date with Bitcoin development. And so it seems there's a lot of code changes, but I feel like in terms of getting big changes into Bitcoin, like soft forks, there's Paul Stork, you might have heard of him, he's trying to get drive chains, like big bips like that. I felt like these kind of big changes seem to be becoming less frequent. So, but you're saying there's actually more code changes. So, I don't know. What do you think of that?
Well, the changes that you're talking to might directly affect consensus. So by design, they should be very, very difficult to enter. There's a lot of code, most of the code that goes into Bitcoin Core today does not directly affect consensus. It's still a problem, though, because every full node runs that code. And if it doesn't directly affect consensus, it doesn't mean it doesn't affect the operation of your node. But speaking of the protocol changes and the forks, it's good that it's very hard for them to happen because we really, really don't want Bitcoin to become a dumping ground for ideas. You can use Ethereum for that. Bitcoin is by design, it has to be super conservative.
I agree. But that's kind of because it's supposed to be money and we need money to be safe and secure and conservative. So basically, I guess you're saying that there's less changes in the core kind of consensus code, and that's sort of ossified, but the actual code around, like the network code, not consensus code, there's still a lot of changes.
Ossified is a very tricky, because ossification means like a derivative. So it means like a deceleration of the progress. We don't see that yet. It might be just very slow moving.
You think there's no deceleration in changes in consensus code?
It
feels like that to me, to be honest, but I haven't like measured it. But it feels like there's less changes.
Taproot was a massive change, and it got through without much trouble. If you had a very critical mind, you could find a lot of trouble with the complexity that got merged. And before that, SegWit, again, I was like, how much politics was merged into Bitcoin? And we actually like increased the block size, right? So to measure the pace, it's not like how many times it changes, it's how big the changes are as well. And some of the changes being considered can be quite massive. And the quality of the debate around that maybe is not as strict and as rigorous as you would think might be required. So ossification may be too early to say. Slowness, it's a good thing. And we just need to make sure that slowness encourages well thought out changes rather than we just debate something until somebody gets exhausted and people stop objecting to it just because they got tired of arguing. And then it gets merged and it's a huge thing that becomes a problem later.
I think I agree with you, but you know, part of maintaining something is actually cutting code out and simplifying it. And that's kind of why Bitcoin is so good, because it is kind of simple. But I think there's a little bit of a bad incentive in a way, because tell me if you agree with this, but developers in Bitcoin, it's a very prestigious thing to be a Bitcoin contributor. Like in Bitcoin space, if somebody contributes, you know, at a conference, oh, wow, you contribute to Bitcoin. It's a very prestigious thing. And it kind of creates this incentive to make contributions for that prestige. Everybody wants to make contributions. There's an incentive to do that. But, you know, actually sometimes the good decision is not to actually contribute anything or to even remove something. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's crazy. I'll be honest. I didn't go deep on BitVM, but that whole proposal, it didn't need to ride on the brand of Bitcoin and pretend like it's an improvement to Bitcoin. It's like one of the proposals to make like some Turing complete machine on top of Bitcoin. But it doesn't really need Bitcoin. It just happens to be compatible and might be useful in later scenarios that are related to Bitcoin. But to represent it as an extension or an upgrade to Bitcoin, I think it's exactly what you just said. It's an attempt for some people to just ride the prestige of the name. And unfortunately, I do think it happens a lot more often than we think. Just judging by the current maintainers, most of them are quite young. And I had a pleasure of talking to a couple at conferences. It just, to some of them, it's like the initial interest to get involved was not from the fascination with the technology, which that's another topic we didn't got too deep into. But when Satoshi published his initial code, to me, and accompanied by his writings, over the years, the more I look at it, the more genius it seems, like absolute genius. And he wasn't a great coder, like most people know that. He wasn't like a perfect coder. And he coded on Windows initially, like so. But the way he collected the system from the puzzle pieces, like hashcash and all the other different concepts, and the way he talked about it, described everything from deep tech to high like game theory and monetary kind of predictions. That's pure genius. Then after like during his time and after, there were some extremely smart people like Gavin and a few others, Halfini, of course, like super smart. And then when you look at the state of things today, there's not a single person who you could say, okay, this is like definitely a genius. Like you can see in Ethereum, there's Vitalik doing his thing. And within the scope of Ethereum, he's the genius there. There are a few super smart people, like, you know, Peter Willey, who's working on the deep crypt things, and he's the author of the separate library, libsec k1, I think. He's always super smart. It's also curious how before Bitcoin he didn't do those things. Like he did, I believe he didn't do much.
I guess you're trying to say is somebody who had, but there's nobody who has that kind of authority in Bitcoin. The way, for example, Vitalik, he does have actually authority.
Authority is in technology, authority often comes from genius, because like engineers love to follow like super smart people, but sometimes it doesn't mean anything, right? Sometimes there's like a, especially in non-technical projects, there's a very stupid person in charge, and that's fine. But all I'm saying is like Bitcoin initially, like it was a work of genius. Bitcoin today, only the original code of Satoshi is what by now is like, I believe it's less than 1% of Bitcoin core, less than 1%. And 99% is the code by other people. And you could not say any of them are like geniuses of the level of Satoshi. People Great. Come to the project fascinated not with the technology and not with the original genius of Satoshi, but with the brand and the poetry of it, the gospel of Michael Saylor and the CNBC coverage and all that. And they come, okay, how can I kind of, even with the best intentions, how can I be part of it? And we know, and like for not for Bitcoin yet, but for other open source projects, there's a lot of spam going on just for people to gain a kind of contribution count on their GitHub CV, GitHub resume. Thankfully, Bitcoin is still guarding from that, but a more sophisticated level of just benign interest of engineers who come, okay, Bitcoin is a big thing. It's like growing, the value is growing. Maybe I'll be rich if I work on this. Or maybe I'll be famous, or maybe I'll feel good about myself. That is a really, really bad incentive that usually is a very negative filter, as opposed to people like very nerdy engineers who really do amazing protocol work, but they're absolutely not interested in the monetary, political side. It's actually a repulsive factor for them. So today, if you go on Hacker News or some other forum with a lot of engineers and nerds, the sentiment regarding Bitcoin is usually on the negative side. It's not, at some point it was like 80% negative, today it's maybe 60% negative, but still there's a lot more smart engineers who dislike most things about Bitcoin. So incentives matter, and incentives are a problem today. You're absolutely correct. And I don't have a good solution yet.
I know a lot of developers, like I think Greg Maxwell mentioned something, who was a very early developer. And I think one of the reasons he, this guy for lead, stepping away a bit from Bitcoin development was that he was constantly having to say no to people. Like people want to make this contribution and he has to say no, 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 no. And, you know, it's like people get upset at him because he blocks people who write this code and they want to get merged into Bitcoin, but he has to constantly say no. And that's actually kind of, speaking of Vitalik and Ethereum, that's actually kind of also what happened there back in the day in 2010. Vitalik had his own contributions where he wanted to merge into Bitcoin and to make it more like Ethereum. And with good reason, it was not accepted because it would impact the decentralization. So people said no to the changes that Vitalik proposed. So he went on to create Ethereum. And I think it was good that they weren't allowed because, yeah, we wouldn't have that decentralization in Bitcoin that we do. So one last question. In terms of Bitcoin development now, is there some change that you think is interesting to you? Or what's kind of happening now in Bitcoin development? What are some things that you think should be done or that people are working on that are kind of interesting?
I'm very positively excited about the new effort to finally create a spec and like authoritative spec that is written in English rather than C++ and finally kind of plugs the gaps in the specification, completes what is written in the BIPs. So that could be very important. That, and if the work on the kernel of Bitcoin Core is complete and the kernel is extracted as a small, tiny library that is easy to view for many engineers. So between those two things, the spec and the kernel, these two things, if there's progress made on them, they could enable many more competing nodes to start being developed again. To me, that's absolutely critical. Maybe not even the result, but the attempt. I was just looking at like what one developer in Poland doing a competing node implementation in the language Go, full node implementation. And the wealth of understanding of Bitcoin that you gain when you do from scratch implement a full node, it's you cannot get it any other way. Like I tried to do my own, like I tinkered with how do you extract a Bitcoin transaction or even a block from on disk files. And to do that, there's no spec online anywhere. You have to start with like the old wiki that kind of says a little bit about the header format. Then you have to like do more Googling on Stack Overflow where Peter talks about something. And then at the end of the day, you have to go into Bitcoin Core code to actually track down where the header is serialized into on disk format. That is insane. There's just no spec. So the only way to implement like parts of Bitcoin, especially if you want to replicate and be compatible with on disk data file formats, is to go into the actual code. So if we make it easier for people to tinker with Bitcoin and to implement parts or all of the protocol, I think it's extremely important for more people to get into Bitcoin, to understand the protocol. Ultimately, my hope is there's going to be more implementations, maybe not full, maybe partial, maybe like there will be niche, they won't be widely used, but they will be fully operational, just helping you, again, connect to the network and track down some potential bugs in the network. We really, really need that for the protocol, the network, and even Bitcoin Core itself to be successful.
Is there anything else you want to mention or maybe promote?
I love that we had this conversation. I just want more people to be curious about Bitcoin and not stop at the surface level, because it's attention grabbing. It's inspiring sometimes, but at the end of the day, it's like TikTok, you know, it's just waste your time listening to, is Bitcoin going up, down? That is not what it's about. I would really love for more people to get a little more curious about the technology, the politics, the behind the scenes, the behind the curtains. And for some of them, it's just a normal positive curiosity. For some other people, including myself, maybe it's more like concern driven. I don't believe the world will end if somehow Bitcoin collapses, but I do believe it's a great piece of technology. And I do think a lot of people will fight against it. And we haven't even started enumerating the types of attacks that will happen. So some people think, okay, they'll ban it, they'll block it from exchanges, something like that. But, you know, if there's an intelligence agency that has 15 years to fight it, they will easily start to infiltrate the developer community and maybe slightly guiding it towards somewhere where it can never challenge the fiat system. So, yeah, we should be mindful that it's a possibility. Concerned, curious, then good things will happen.
Thanks for your time, Andrew. And maybe we'll see each other at a different Bitcoin event. It was good to talk with you, and see you next time.
Okay, see you.